This is a Discovery Channel Radio podcast. Learn more about our podcast, including Discovery Channel News Podcast, at discoverychannelradio.com. You can also get Discovery Channel Radio 24 hours a day on Sirius Satellite Radio. Learn more at Sirius.com.
Many American cities have history. But what about a city where history is made each and every day?
Americans love to come to Washington, D.C. I mean, it's their hometown. It's their nation's capital.
But there's much more than pride and politics here.
We like Washington, D.C. It's quite a cosmopolitan city. There's an incredible amount to see. And I think from a vacation value, just the museums alone are well worth the trip.
D.C. is historical. It's adventurous. It's busy. It's very lively.
Lively by day and night.
It's kind of a spooky place at night. There's a lot of history here, as you know, and the legacies of all the people here make it very interesting in the evening.
When the Senate and Congress close down for the day and the museums and monuments shut their doors, this politically active city doesn't show signs of slowing down. It's just at night, there's a different kind of energy, the otherworldly kind.
Wherever you walk, there is this sort of, I want to say sort of a spectral vibration or a ghost vibe. It's almost as if Washington is kind of a ghost central, really. So much has happened here that I think maybe the spirits of these long dead men and women don't want to leave.
And it seems long expired presidents are the most common spirits in town.
Some of these presidents come back once in a while and haunt the existing president. Lincoln came back to the White House when Johnson was there and haunted Johnson.
And while few of the tourists that visit Washington, D.C. realize it, one of the city's most prolific ghosts actually lived next door to the White House.
This is the president's neighborhood, and it has been since almost the first years of our country.
The Decatur House is a historic museum that, like its neighbor, the White House, is believed to be haunted.
A lot of people are focusing only on the White House, and they don't realize some of the other stories that have taken place right here on the square. I keep glancing up at the windows and wondering if I'll see something.
The house does have a different feel to it. It is a different feeling that actually makes me sometimes a little bit more uncomfortable, happy when I have someone else with me.
The haunting tales date back to 1819, when naval war hero Stephen Decatur and his wife Susan built this stately residence.
It was the first private home to be built on this square, and Stephen Decatur, who was a naval hero from the War of 1812 and the Barbary Wars, was using prize money that he had received for capturing enemy ships during those conflicts.
He had been appointed to the Board of Naval Commissioners. He was no longer going to sea.
With a life ahead of him on land, the couple was resolved to relax and entertain, and threw lavish parties for fellow socialites.
They were moving in the highest circles of society. Their best friends were James and Dolly Madison and President Monroe and the First Lady.
Sometimes some of the parties had up to 400 people who attended.
I think they had a lovely life together and thought they had a bright future ahead.
But at one of the couple's gatherings, many noticed a change in Stephen's demeanor.
This is the window that the stories tell us Stephen Decatur looked out during that party and was so pensive and thoughtful.
Sadly, friends and family learned the reason for Stephen's strange actions far too late.
Stephen Decatur had a very good friend and mentor in the Navy by the name of James Barron. And unfortunately, Commodore Barron, during some of our conflicts with the British, had done some things that Stephen Decatur felt were cowardly, and he said so publicly. And Barron took offense at this. It was a case of injured pride, and eventually called Decatur out on a duel.
The duel was set for March 22nd, 1820. Decatur feared the worst and withdrew from the life he once knew. He drafted a will and kept the upcoming duel from those around him, especially his beloved wife. The only person aware of his secret was an old naval colleague named Bainbridge, who, according to the rules of dueling, Decatur chose to be his second.
Well, by all the rules of dueling, the 2 seconds should have stepped in then and tried to get the two men to talk out their differences. Instead, Bainbridge and Elliot, the Baron's second, had them proceed with it and set the paces at just 8 paces, which I think is around 24 feet.
Slowly, the men walked, turned, raised their weapons, and fired.
Both men were wounded. Stephen Decatur mortally wounded.
The bullet that hit Decatur severed some major arteries.
But Stephen didn't die from his wounds immediately.
They did manage to load him into a carriage and bring him back here to the house.
When Stephen arrived home, he had one final request. He asked that his wife not see him die. But Susan's love was so strong, she insisted on comforting her husband in his final hours.
He definitely, unfortunately, suffered a great deal.
Several hours later, Stephen Decatur's life ended.
When Stephen died, Susan was completely distraught. Stephen had really been a source of many things to her, not only companionship, but she and he entered into a social world that really became part of her life. When he died, she definitely felt very alone.
Today, their sad story is told to the hundreds of visitors who tour their former home each day.
As soon as people hear about the duel and that Stephen Decatur died in the house, that is going to be their next question. Is it haunted?
But some wish they never asked this question. After all, ignorance can be bliss when you're in the company of a ghost.
We had a woman working here a few years ago who was upstairs in the room that would have been Decatur's bedroom. And in her peripheral vision, sort of behind her, she sees a pair of feet in men's shoes. And then she turns around, and there's no one there.
Another employee has also experienced his phantom presence firsthand.
I've heard the door slamming and what sounds like somebody talking on the telephone, but nobody is there. And the other person I work with also hears it. It happens in the winter when it's dark. Yes, it exists. Yeah, they exist.
They? It seems the ghost of Stephen Decatur is not alone.
Susan, he would certainly have a reason to haunt this place as well. Sherry even brought in some experts from Baltimore in paranormal experiences, and they came in with instrumentation and various things and found a lot of spots in the house that they said indicated there was a presence here.
Whether Susan or Stephen's ghostly form will appear next, no one knows. But for employees of the Decatur House, the anticipation is chilling.
I've worked wedding receptions and corporate events that will run till 11, 12 midnight. And especially if I'm out in the back garden and I look back at the house, I face it then with a little bit of trepidation. After I started working here and had these couple experiences, it made me a believer.
From trendy boutique hotels to grand luxurious ones, Washington, D.C. has it all. The famous Omni Shoreham Hotel sits on 11 acres and is where people stay when they want first-class service away from it all. The Omni's luxury and comfort create a peaceful setting, but its standing as one of D.C.'s political hotspots has left it a hotspot for ghosts.
The Omni Shoreham actually also has a ghost suite. If you come to the hotel, it's suite number 870. People say it has a ghost in it.
A friend of ours told us about the ghost suite in the Omni Shoreham, and we decided to go looking for it.
It got to where the stories spread all around. I had to take tours up to the ghost suite. And on the way up in the elevator, I was sort of very seriously asked, does anybody here have a heart condition? I'd rather you not continue the tour. The Shoreham was built in 1930 on the location of Connecticut and Calvert Street, located in a very historic Woodley Park area of the city.
It used to be a really, really, really the landmark in the city.
It has hosted countless inaugurations, important national events that have taken place in the Omni Shoreham.
They said in a Saturday Evening Post story one time that you could hold a quorum of the Senate in the lobby of the Shoreham.
In the mid-1900s, the Omni's Blue Room was the place to be seen.
Right now, we are in the Blue Room of the Omni Shoreham Hotel, which back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s used to be the hotspot in Washington, D.C. People say that it actually was the place for the well-known politicians, the old money Washingtonians to come to on their weekdays and weekend nights.
But high above all the glitz and glamour was a quiet housekeeper named Juliet, who tended to the family of one of the hotel's owners.
Daugherty's had this huge suite on the top floor of the hotel, and she served as caretaker to the Daugherty apartment. Whenever they were coming to town or they had to get any guests, she would take care of them.
Juliet kept a simple life and was devoted entirely to her work. But since the Daugherty's spent most of their time at their other residences, Juliet was often alone in the gracious apartment.
How beautiful could it be? You're in her apartment with these beautiful paintings, beautiful sculptures, the eighth floor, overlooking Rock Creek Park. It was just a beautiful place to live in.
But one night, something strange happened to Juliet while she was alone in the room. The front desk got a mysterious phone call from the eighth floor. Raspy breathing was all they heard on the other line. Then it stopped, and Juliet was dead. Was it an illness or something far more sinister? No one knows for sure. But many believe she's been unable to leave her work behind.
Shortly after Juliet's death, guests started coming to the front desk with complaints on the eighth floor near that apartment.
Some of the legends of this room are TVs. No one's in the room, and they turn themselves on. Piano playing coming from the room.
And the sounds of someone rustling, as if they're eternally tidying up the room. Is it possible that Juliet still putters around the Omni long after death?
The room has secrets. I believe it's still haunted.
Recently, a guest staying next to room 870 was assured of Juliet's ghostly presence.
He said, I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and somebody on the other side of my bedroom was making a lot of noise. Now, this is what spooked me a little bit. His bedroom wall was common to Juliet Benton's bedroom where she died. And he said, Phil, I am telling you, somebody's in there.
The staff has no doubt that Juliet still roams the eighth floor of the Omni Shoreham Hotel.
We had housekeepers who had been with us for years and were as sober as a judge, who would say their cart was moved. They felt a very strong breeze in the room, like someone had passed by them quickly.
Perhaps Juliet hopes to make the afterlife a pleasant home for her employer, just as she did when they were both alive.
Bless her heart, I think. My opinion was Miss Juliet still making her rounds as a housekeeper.
It seems at the Omni Shoreham, the best way to attract the attention of a ghost is with an untidy room. Just across the river from the bustling capital sits a quaint town called Alexandria, Virginia.
Alexandria has colonial ambiance and European flair, so we like to call it the fun side of the Potomac.
It's filled with cobblestone streets and beautiful brick walks, and we're right on the water on the Potomac River, so it's a beautiful place to stroll with fun little shops.
I was a history major in college, and I fell in love with the place the minute I set foot in Old Town. There's a great deal of charm in the old city. It is just charming, and it will charm you the moment you step into the town.
Many are surprised to learn that this small town has a history as rich and ghostly as its famous neighbor.
Alexandria is actually the longest occupied territory of the Civil War. That happened because of our location so close to Washington, D.C.
When you go down and walk down the streets, you know that there was some tragedy that happened in this place, whether by war or by fires or by plagues or whatever has happened in the past 200 to 300 years.
And often when history and misfortune mix, the byproducts are ghosts.
Yes, there is a definite presence here in Old Town. It can be very eerie.
Strangely, Alexandria's most disturbing ghostly tale is set in a charming local gift shop called the Christmas Addicts House in the Country.
We have a lot of tourist items. We have things that tourists might want to pick up to bring home. Wonderful patriotic ornaments, a lot of Christmas ornaments, as well as country ornaments here in House in the Country.
And it seems visitors often pick up something else, a paranormal presence.
We didn't really know that there was a lot of hauntings in Old Town when we bought the building, but there have been quite a few occurrences.
The house in the country back in the 1850s was owned and lived in by the Schaefer family. And the Schaefer family had several children, and their youngest daughter was named Laura.
The young woman was both attractive and mysterious, qualities that captured the heart of Lord Charles Tennyson. Tennyson was a wealthy and established member of the community, and the young Laura was the perfect partner to calm his hectic life.
And finally, Charles Tennyson asked Laura to marry him.
The evening of the wedding was a happy one for the new bride.
She would have been getting prepared, putting on lace, refinement, and getting ready for her father to pick them up.
But wedding bells were not meant to ring that night. As she reached over to grab a lantern, her dress caught on fire.
She ran from the top floor all the way down the stairs to the bottom floor, where she collapsed the first floor landing. Her brother-in-law and her mother were there, and they witnessed the event, and they saw her on the floor, basically completely charred up, but still alive.
Her body was terribly burned, third-degree burns.
She was brought back into her bedroom on the third floor. There was no way at that time that she could survive such a tragedy. Unfortunately, the wedding turned into a funeral. And the last person to see her was her fiancé, Charles Tennyson.
Laura's husband-to-be was overcome with grief. He decided he couldn't go on.
Her fiancé basically took a couple drinks, grabbed a gun, shot himself in the head.
It is said the two were buried next to each other so they could at least spend eternity together. But the story doesn't end even there. This is where legend begins. The house is said to be very haunted, and very haunted by Laura herself.
Some say Laura has chosen to spend eternity in the one place she loved and lost the most.
What's interesting is over the years, the stories, though, have been pretty consistent about some of the unusual things that have happened there. There tends to be a rush of wind on the stairs when all the windows and doors are closed.
Employees have felt Laura. They have heard her.
A few years ago, we had a manager who had quite a few encounters with Laura. Papers would move, adding machines would turn on. There'd be footsteps upstairs, and she was very uncomfortable with Laura.
Concerned for employees, Faye contacted ghost hunter Al Tias.
We had an investigation done by a professional in Washington, D.C. He was able to find Laura and talk to her.
One of the more interesting things about this haunting is that normally the incident, when it occurs on the third floor, the activity would be on the third floor. But in this case, it's actually the second floor that has the most activity. A lot of times when we were here, we would actually hear a woman speaking. Either it would be just a friendly hello, or it'd be whispering, or it'd be something to that effect. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to see if we can get some electronic voice phenomenon off of Laura.
The researchers couldn't find evidence of Laura on the recordings. But when they asked her to reveal herself, things quickly changed. The lights in the country house began to flicker on and off.
So we ask ourselves, was that a sign from Laura?
While many have felt her presence, she only appears to a select group.
Adults have never seen her, but the people who have seen Laura are small children.
I think the first thing that happened was a small, like a 4 or 5 year old little girl came in to use the restroom. And when she came out, she asked her mom, who was the lady in white in the mirror?
And on occasion, a little child will tug the mother's sleeve and say, Mommy, who is that woman in the wedding dress following me around?
And while the children's encounters have been tame, a former building owner was not as lucky.
Prior to the House of the Country owning the Schaefer home, it was a real estate office just a few years ago. And one night in early June, one of the realtors was working late. She thought she heard something rustling around upstairs on one of the floors above her.
The woman went upstairs to investigate. But when she got to the third floor door, it wouldn't budge.
She thought she smelled smoke. She put her hand against the wood, and the wood was hot. Something on the other side of that doorway was on fire.
Finally, the door burst open.
The woman felt this intense heat rush right past her. She then heard a young woman screaming in terrible pain, careening down the stairs and crashing to the hardwood floor near the front door. Needless to say, that realtor never worked late ever again.
It seems Laura is unable to leave her old home behind.
Laura Schaefer, as well as the other ghosts, stay where they suffered the most tragedy.
I think Laura's life ended very tragically. And I think everyone here acknowledges the fact that we would never want to be in that kind of situation. And we'd never want to be in limbo. So maybe if we're nice and realize that she does exist, that she'll be able to go where she needs to go.
A trip to D.C. wouldn't be complete without a trip into its neighboring countryside. And for a little-known treasure off the beaten path, there's St. Mary's County, Maryland. St. Mary's County boasts the Point Lookout Park, where tourists can enjoy picnics, fishing, boating, and discover Civil War history littered throughout the park. There's an old Civil War fort on the grounds, and a prisoners of war camp where over 3,000 soldiers died. But it's the Point Lookout Lighthouse, where history really comes alive.
There are rumors of many spirits that may haunt Point Lookout Lighthouse.
There have been a lot of ships that have sunk. There have also been a lot of drownings. Then the Civil War hit. So it's just full of death and violence. I think that's what lends this place in particular to be haunted.
There are some settlers that have come, some old souls who have settled in, and I don't think have any intention of leaving.
Situated on the banks of the Chesapeake Bay, Point Lookout Lighthouse was opened in 1830. Over the years, many lighthouse keepers have kept watch, but the ones revered the most were James and Ann Davis.
They had a hard job. Not only had they had their own households to maintain, but that light had to be cared for, it had to be maintained, it had to be fueled when necessary.
But just 3 months after moving in, tragedy struck when her husband died. Anne was left alone with the difficult task of keeping the lighthouse.
That had to have been very difficult. She would have had to make sure the light was continually lit, which would mean cleaning the lenses as well as refilling the oil. And lots of times, if ships were in distress, the lighthouse keepers would actually take a boat and go out and help rescue people.
After James's death, legend says Anne became a shrewd businesswoman, taking advantage of the proximity of the military fort that sat nearby the lighthouse. She began to produce alcohol in the basement, and weary soldiers looking for a drink helped make Anne a comfortable living. After years of entrepreneurship and tireless service to the lighthouse, Anne died of old age. But it seems Anne's story doesn't end here.
The very first night that I moved in, I heard walking up and down the hallway on the second level at just outside of my bedroom door.
Was it the spirit of Anne Davis forever keeping watch?
Every morning I would come down and sit in the living room before leaving for work, and I would hear a voice, female voice, singing at the top of the stairs, who just sounded so friendly and happy, and I heard her just all the time.
But Anne doesn't roam the lighthouse alone. It seems the soldiers who frequented during life do so in death.
I heard a group of men talking in the living room, and it just reminded me of a group of soldiers. They would just be, you know, talking and telling jokes and laughing.
Then one night, Laura spotted shadowy male figures on the front steps of the house.
The figures I had first thought were Civil War soldiers because of the fact that it used to be a Civil War prisoner of war camp on the site here, just outside of the lighthouse doors.
After the fort that was said to be active during Anne's time, the land was used as a Civil War camp. Thousands of soldiers died in the camp's hospital, on the very ground where the lighthouse sits.
Civil War prisoners did travel through that hospital on both Union and Confederate. It was one of the few hospitals where both Union and Confederate soldiers were treated together. Many suffered great pain in that area.
A lot of soldiers died there, and they died particularly hideous deaths, mostly due from exposure and disease.
Locals say this tragic past is still alive at the lighthouse.
One morning I got up and was taking care of brushing my hair or whatever when I heard a blood-curdling scream right behind my head.
The final days of the soldiers have left their horrific mark. And after 2.5 years of sharing her house with ghosts, Laura left the lighthouse. But not without hiring a paranormal investigator to dig up the past of her former housemates.
One of my main areas of interest is called EVP, or electronic voice phenomena, and it's where you take a tape recorder with you, and you record and ask questions in a controlled environment. And when you play the tape back, or the digital recording, you will hear voices that were not there at the time you did the recording. And And as we walk to the other side of the house, you actually hear on the recordings a voice that was not ours say, "Abandon."
Were these sounds the product of overactive imaginations or actual spirits trying to reach out from beyond?
Well, I moved out in 1981, and the house has been empty since then. And unfortunately, since that time, vandals have gotten in, and my personal feelings when I come to visit now is that the ghosts are very unhappy with the way that the house looks and the way it's been treated.
It seems even ghosts want to live in peace. And while often startling, Laura never felt the ghosts of the lighthouse were harmful.
When I lived here, even though I was by myself, I never felt like I lived here alone. I always had lots of guests, I felt like, in every room, and it was a different person. I never felt in jeopardy, but I can't say that I didn't feel fear at certain times, and especially when the lights would go out during a storm.
You've been listening to a Travel Channel feature presentation.